And so fusion points basically is that moment in time where logic and positive emotion merge and they ignite. And what happens is it creates loyalty. It creates tenacity. It makes people comfortable taking that next step in the process. And in the book, we teach that as far as how to grow an organization. But it is the reason that Bob's process on becoming objection-proof has always worked. And it's because it doesn't start with the idea that, okay, my prospect said this, so I got to overcome that objection.
Welcome to the Legacy Roadmap Podcast, your ultimate guide for creating a lasting legacy as an entrepreneur. Whether you're an ambitious entrepreneur or a seasoned business owner, our podcast offers insightful conversations with successful entrepreneurs and experts who have navigated the path of legacy creation. We explore topics that matter to you: personal responsibility, financial growth, leadership, and succession planning. Our goal? To equip you with practical insights and strategies that help you transition from simply running your business to building a legacy. Join us each week as we delve into purposeful discussions aimed at positively impacting future generations. Your journey towards leaving a lasting legacy starts right here, right now. Let's dive in.
Does your business serve homeowners? If so, you need to know about HOA.com, the number one referral network for professionals who serve homeowners. And we're looking for quality contractors and home service pros that we can recommend and refer to homeowners in your area. Not only will you get promoted on the HOA.com website, you'll get business from other certified pros and premier pros in your market. These people serve homeowners every day, so we help you build referral partnerships that keep referrals coming to your business for years to come. Go to HOA.com/pro now and get started.
Are you an entrepreneur or business owner? If so, you need to know about the Achieve Systems Business Building Membership. We are one of the best referral-based communities that wants to refer you. We help generate you thousands of leads per year. We also provide you an incredible mentorship program that has won many awards. We don't stop there. We have 60 plus opportunities to take your business to the next level, like authoring and publishing books and many, many more. Go to AchieveSystemsPro.com and get started today.
Do you want to make more money in your business? Most business owners focus on building revenue. That's not enough. Building profits is what feeds your family, and almost no business owner understands how to build profit without building revenue. I can show you with near-perfect accuracy the exact business growth strategies that will generate the most revenue for your business in the shortest amount of time, focused on building profit. Learn more at bizlife.coach. Our guest today has coached and led sales teams for over 30 years in multiple industries and was among the top sales performers and leaders in the nation. Jeff West was an entrepreneur in the field sales management with well-known Fortune 500 insurance company, Aflac. Jeff has been on numerous national and international podcasts and has been quoted in sales and marketing management magazines, National Federation of Independent Business, and Peak Sales Recording. Whether on stage or during interviews, he combines hard-hitting, talk to the bank, take it to the bank sales wisdom with an edge of humor that engages the audience that few others have. Robert and Jeff C. West talk about sales and Jeff's new book, co-authored with Bob Berg, A Business Parable About Sales. Jeff's down-to-earth style combined with the sales excellence creates a multi-layered story that brings sales training to a new level. Jeff's work with Bob adds a sales leadership level to the story that is unmatched in most sales lessons. Well, Jeff, welcome back to the show. This is a first. You are my first guest to be on a third time.
I'm honored. I'm excited.
Well, I'm excited too. And part of the reason that you've been on multiple times now is because you're continuing to crank out books. And so we had you on with Lisa Wilbur talking about Said the Lady with the Blue Hair. And now you've written a new book with Bob Berg. So tell us a little bit about your new book.
Oh, thank you. The new book is titled Streetwise to Saleswise, become objection proof and beat the sales blues. And it's a business or sales parable that, of course, you know this, you and I've known each other a while now. It's my favorite genre to write in. I like writing really good fiction and then teaching lessons in there. And this one is set in New Orleans. New Orleans always will have a special place in my heart. I have a music background. And so the atmosphere there, the music there is great. And the story is about a young man who was raised on the streets of New Orleans, basically. And he's a little bit brash, a good guy, but a little bit mouthy, I guess, at times. And we basically, to follow a really good story arc, as my mentor John David Mann says, you get your hero up in the tree, you throw rocks at him, then you get him safely down at the end. Well, in the first chapter, we get Thaddeus fired. he didn't have a sales background, but he ends up taking a position in sales. And so we take him from that young, brash, really should know better, have better people skills guy that he was with no sales experience. And we follow his life through an entire year, and where he gets a handle on things and he's doing really well. And I try my best in everything that I write. I try to make the geography almost like its own character. I did that with Hawaii and said the lady with the blue hair. And in this one, New Orleans, I give it the feel and the flair. I want the reader or the listener, if someone's on the audiobook, I want them to almost feel like they're there. I got such a great compliment. I think it was from Art Subzac. And he was talking about he's read a lot of books in his lifetime and he's written books. But to be able to be transported in his mind to the movie, which is what he felt like this was, it was a special thing. And that was a special compliment. So I enjoyed that.
Nice. So obviously, let's talk about a sales background, right? I mean, obviously, to write a sales parable, you need to have some sales experience and results to be able to tell a story that is trying to help people with the tips and tools to get those same results.
Sure. In this case, we actually, it's a unique experience as a co-author. When Lisa and I said the lady with blue hair, it was primarily what she taught. Yes, we worked some of my things in there as well, but it was very subtle with how I worked my sales and leadership skills in there. But with this one with Bob, he and I have known each other, as you know, for 22 years now, I guess it is. And we both have done a tremendous amount of sales training, me in the insurance industry, Bob in pretty much every industry. And he had some material that he had worked on in years past where it was some great how-to material on becoming objection-proof, basically how you could work effectively within the objection rather than just trying to overcome the objection or battle back and forth with a prospect. So we took a lot of that. We took a lot of my sales training that I have in leadership training, and you can really see both of our backgrounds coming through pretty well in the story and in the audiobook too. I basically used Bob's voice as the voice of the mentor and even the mentor's mentor, because I really teach you how to be a great, or we teach you how to be a great leader in this book as well. But it's got a lot of great organizational skills. I mean, this is one of the most wide spectrum sales books that I've ever read, much less written. So it's got a good flair. And yeah, since Bob and I both have been doing sales training for 30 plus years, it's easy to do. And go ahead.
Well, I was just going to dig a little deeper into your sales experience.
Okay. I started getting ready for sales in college because I got 2 degrees in music. That makes no sense whatsoever, but it's actually true. I've got a bachelor's in music education and a master's degree in music composition. And those 2 degrees, by the way, and a $10 bill will get me a cup of coffee at Starbucks. It's really pretty cool. And my first job out of college, I had promised my wife, we got married during the middle of that master's degree year, and I'd promised her that she'd be back in school in the fall because she was in Alabama, I was in Texas. And so I kept my word. I finished my master's in a year and we went back to Alabama. Well, there were no teaching jobs open. not close enough to where she needed to be in school. So I took a job in sales almost by accident. It was with a musical instrument company, and I did know the people that worked there. So, you know, there was a connection. But one of my greatest mentors in my life is a man named Jack Amberson. And he was the sales manager there, ran the company. And he said, come stay with me for a week and see if you want to do this job. So during spring break of that year, I went with him and decided to take that position. There's some more behind the scenes stories there, depending on how much time we have today. But so I was in the musical instrument business. That first year I made 50% more than I would make teaching. So I didn't go back into teaching at all. And I did seminars and I would do some clinics with bands and stuff, but I didn't go back and teach full time. After that, they moved me to Georgia and I ran their Georgia operation for about 3 years. I decided to leave that industry though, because the hours were really rugged, especially in the fall. You'd run around during the day and you'd see all the school kids and do instrument repairs. And then at night you would have to do the parent meetings. And so, you know, I would leave anywhere from 5 to 6 in the morning and I'd get back anywhere from 10 to midnight. And that wasn't conducive when, you know, we had a little girl up during that time and I didn't see her enough and I wasn't willing to keep doing that. So I ended up in the industrial uniform industry. And that's really where I cut my teeth and began to learn what I was doing, because I had to prospect. I had to do a lot of things there. Did well with that. Then 3 years later, I was one of the number one people in the nation with that company. And I got a promotion and they moved me to Texas. And that's how I ended up in Texas for the last 34 years, was on that job transfer. Did that for a couple of years. Had the sales and service people working directly for me at that point. We got bought out by a competitor. That didn't work really well for me. At one point in my life, I actually blamed that company for it not working well, but that's not fair. The one person who's the most responsible for my success or failure is the guy sitting in this seat right here as I'm talking to you. So, nice. So I ended up leaving that company and I began a long-term career in the insurance industry. I got a position. I was self-employed, which is much better, because I'm like you, buddy. I am much better at shaving the boss's face than I am at kissing the boss's foot, and I'm not going to do it. And somebody offered me a job a couple of years ago, Robert. It was so funny. And they offered me to interview for vice president of sales for a company. And I told them, I said, you know, I would consider it. I said, but I don't think I'm employable anymore. And she said, why? And I said, because you're going to have some young upper executive that says, well, Jeff, I think we need to do this way. And I'll say, I don't think so, Sparky. And he'll be firing me anyway. So
Sparky. But you got to get Sparky in a book.
That's right. But I did 20 years in the insurance industry. The last 10 of those, I was actually a state sales manager for a Fortune 500 insurance company. And so when I retired from that industry about 10 years ago now, wrote the first book, The Unexpected Tour Guide. And that went well. And our friend Bob Berg was so encouraging to me. He and I had become friends over that time. And he was a great mentor to me about making the transition to writing and speaking and all of that. And so it was an extra blessing this last year to be able to co-write with one of my best friends and also one of my heroes in life. So it was a joy. And have I ever told you the story how we decided to write the book?
I don't think so.
How we wrote the book. Bob and I are always communicating about stuff, and we can talk about sales for hours and it would bore most people, but Bob and I get really into it. he had emailed me something, and I don't remember the exact subject, but it was something he was thinking about posting on LinkedIn and just wanted my thoughts. And the very last sentence in his email said, by the way, save this, because when you and I write our parable, this could come in handy. Now, Robert, at this time, we hadn't discussed writing a parable. We hadn't ever discussed that at all. Because, you know, Bob's had that long relationship with John David Mann, been hugely successful with it. And John's now writing more novels and things of that nature, although he did just win another award on a parable. But so he sent that email. So I replied with an answer to what he was asking. And then I said, oh, and by the way, if you're serious, yeah, we're doing that. And so it began. And He had sent me the manuscript that he had worked on before, which was a how-to thing about becoming objection-proof. And I began to think out the storyline. And my wife and I were sitting in New Orleans somewhere around New Year's Eve, 22 going into 23. And I don't remember the exact how many days it was because we wouldn't have been there on the day of because that place goes insane. And
right.
I love it. And I mean that in a good way, but it goes insane. But we were sitting on a balcony having dinner, like an early late lunch, early dinner at across from the Fred J. Cassabury Park. And this street busker, this young lady began to sing down on the street, and she was absolutely incredible. And although I don't know her, so I didn't write her into the character, I certainly was inspired by her. And I was sitting there with my wife, and I said, you know what? I said, the entire storyline for this book just came to me. I know what I'm going to do.
And yeah, so I got so fun.
Yeah, it's a good thing.
So let's talk a little bit about that storyline. And you mentioned a few things already about, you know, the book. The book not only talks about this young man developing his sales chops, but it also has a leadership element where the mentor is developing his leadership ability. And so there are some multiple levels and layers happening. But the layer that seems to carry the story is really the relationship layer. And so I want to dig a little bit into that because you just mentioned this young lady on the streets that kind of becomes the relational lesson within this parable.
She does a great job of teaching Thaddeus some lessons, doesn't she?
Well, I will tell you from personal experience and from knowledge as a pastor that marriage is the crucible relationship. So anytime you put a man and a woman together, if they're not learning lessons from each other, they don't have a real relationship.
No, but that's true. And of course, in this story, that they never get married. But well, at least as far as the readers know yet, we'll see what happens in a sequel. But the young lady is an extremely talented singer in the storyline, but she has a little bit of a challenge believing in herself. And Thaddeus, the young lady's name is Livia, and Thaddeus is learning his chops, but he's got a music background too, so he related well to her when they met. But she was pretty standoffish, and as the friendship develops, and then Thaddeus drops the ball, and she teaches the young man a lesson, and I'll just leave it at that. I want to let the readers get it from the storyline, but I had as much fun taking her on her journey as I did taking Thaddeus on his. And I knew sitting there that evening having dinner, I knew what I was going to do in that storyline, how it was going to play together and what the outcome would end up being. But it was just fun to write it. Well, as I mentioned to you before, John David Mann is great friends with Bob. He's also a great friend of mine, and he's my writing coach. So it's funny that Bob and I doing this parable, all of his previous parables have been with John. And this one, it's like, okay, John's taking care of everything. He's teaching me too, you know. but John, the way he writes, he has made a point in my mentorship with him. He said, sometimes it's just really fun to start writing and just see where the story takes you. Because you may be teaching something that can be taught 1,000 different ways, but nobody can teach it through your eyes and through your experience. And that's why everybody who thinks they'd like to write a book, you really should, because even if it's a subject that's been done before, it's not been done through your perspective. And that's what will make it unique. But I loved watching the story unfold in the audiobook. I attempted a few accents here and there to make it feel right. But it has been a blessing.
There's even some singing in there. Let's just be honest.
Yeah, there's a little surprise in chapter 12.
Jeff tests his music chops and actually pulls off a pretty cool story. We'll be right back after this short break. Do you need an increase in revenue? We help business owners find $100K in 90 days and create a roadmap for implementation. There's no pressure, just a chance to get some assistance and clarity. Scheduling is easy. Simply visit ownitcall.com and select a time that works for you. It's time for you to focus on doubling the 20% that creates 80% of your revenue. Welcome back. Let's get back to more greatness. But I think that the relational piece is still just as important because there's sales lessons in relationships.
Oh, that is such a good point, Robert. You know, everything that you learn in a sales career will also help you in your relationships with your spouse, with your children, with other people, and vice versa. Everything you learn in those relationships can make you a better business person, a better salesperson. And I got to tell you, Bob and I were on a show. I know there's been a lot of shows since the book came out there because we're doing a pretty heavy book tour. But we were laughing about that idea. When it comes to the becoming objection proof, the process we teach in the book, where instead of basically playing ping pong or doing battle with your prospect, if a prospect has an objection, we teach you how to do that in such a way that not only do you get the opportunity to work with that prospect to find a solution, when you come out the other end, your relationship's stronger. And it's so similar to husband-wife issues. It's similar to any kind of issue, because when you don't agree with something, the worst thing in the world you can ever try to do to another individual, if you don't agree with them or they don't agree with you, is try to overcome their position.
Right.
You need to look no further than our political landscape to really get a grasp of that. People don't like to have their opinions challenged anymore. And it's not about anything other than that. I guess society has dug their heels in is the best way to describe it. But the process that we teach on that is just amazing. And we also work in some fusion points. And it's funny, fusion points has been my branding on the sales training that I do. And it's designed to teach people how to work with the neurology that naturally happens in the brain to make someone comfortable taking that next step. And that's what the objection proof process does. In a sales career, you know, for 40 plus years, I would study the psychology of sales. And when you get into that, it'll tell you, okay, this works better than this. And it really does a great job when you're studying the psychology of sales, but nobody tells you why it works. Mm. And if you understand why it works, then you become much more adept at improvisational things you need to do. And what it gets down to, Robert, on fusion points, I was puzzled. As the state leader of an insurance company, I was puzzled at how you could take two people who on paper look like they should both be very successful. Great resumes, looks like they got a great work ethic, leadership skills, all of it looks great on paper. And then I could put them out in sales expecting both of them to succeed. And sometimes one person would decide to succeed and persist and they would build a big career. The other person would decide to quit. And it puzzled me how they made that decision. So I began to research it. And it took me to the works of Dr. Antonio Damasio, who was a professor at USC and an adjunct professor at the Salk Institute. And he's a professor of neurology. And he studied a group of people where the part of their brain that controlled logic and the part of their brain that controlled emotion couldn't communicate. By accident, by defect, whatever, those parts couldn't communicate. And what he found in his study is those people couldn't make decisions. They could give you the logical outcomes in either way, but they could not make the decision. And what his study basically ended up proving, I'll cut that a little bit short, was but all decisions are made with a combination of logic and emotion. There's no exception. And what happens in the brain, when you have an emotion, it sets off an electrical charge in your brain that goes down into your body and it produces a somatic marker and you feel something different. Now, if it's a negative emotion, like fear, distrust, uncomfortableness, if it's that, the somatic marker that it creates in our bodies, it's very uncomfortable. We don't like that and we don't want to move forward. So when making a decision and it's going to be logic and emotion, whatever the logic is really irrelevant because the emotion's making someone not want to do it. And so when they combine, it creates what I call a collision point and people push back. But the opposite is true too. When it's a positive emotion that happens in the brain, the somatic marker, it creates something in us that we do like. We like the way it feels, if it's joy, love, a sense of belonging, those things make us feel something inside that we actually do like. And thus we want to move forward and do that again. We want to repeat the process. And so fusion points basically is that moment in time where logic and positive emotion merge and they ignite. And what happens is it creates loyalty. It creates tenacity. It makes people comfortable taking that next step in the process. And in the book, we teach that as far as how to grow an organization. But it is the reason that Bob's process on becoming objection-proof has always worked. And it's because it doesn't start with the idea that, okay, my prospect said this, so I got to overcome that objection, and I'll say this, and you'll say that, and I'll say this. Because most of the time, what you're hearing is not the actual objection anyway. So you may come up with a perfect response to the wrong objection. And so the process we take everybody through is it creates empathy. It creates a relationship with that prospect that then you can turn around, you could help them find a solution, and everybody moves forward.
Absolutely. Well, one of the things, obviously, this young man starts his sales career from scratch, which literally means sitting down with a list of names and numbers and making some calls. And many right. people in the space today would say cold calling is dead. But you and I both know that that's not true.
Absolutely.
We both know that at some level that's necessary. But your fusion points try to basically shift cold calling to a little bit warmer calling.
Absolutely. You know, Art Sobczak's a great sales trainer, and he talks about the term smart calling rather than cold calling. I think he uses the term smart calling, where you're doing a little research ahead of time and you're doing some things so that you know some things when you walk in the door, and it makes that prospect more open to your contact. Well, what I do when I teach a fusion points based sales model is I'm teaching salespeople to rather than the first time you even meet a prospect, rather than asking for an appointment, let's don't do it that way. Because the truth is, Robert, on a cold call, you're going to have basically three categories of people. One is going to be that person who knows they need what you do. They may even already know about your company. So when you make contact, they're open to it, and you get the appointment. And if you make enough calls, you can actually make a living just on those, but it's not as efficient as you might want it to be. You've got another group who, they don't know that they need you. They don't really care. And they look at a sales contact that's unexpected as being an interruption to their day. So it creates a negative emotional response. Combine that with the logic, you're going to have a collision point, and they're going to push back on you. And then you got a third group that they've never really considered what you do, that you're not in their thoughts. They're thinking about their day, and there's no particular emotional context to it. They don't have time for you, and it moves on. Well, what we teach in the storyline with that is, and when I'm coaching people, I was on the Zoom call with someone yesterday, kind of coaching them how to make that work in their business model. I teach a process where you make three touches before you ever ask for the first appointment. It could be anything that the person would find valuable. Does it take a little research on your part? Of course it does. But if you make 25 contacts on a normal basis, and you might get one or two appointments, and you do it through the fusion points methodology, and you get 3, 4, or 5 appointments, and quite frankly, Robert, I've gotten as many as 50% before. And so when you do it that way, those three touches beforehand, something that's useful. One of my favorite things to recommend is when someone sees maybe a positive online review, print that thing off on your printer, put a handwritten note to the person and mail it to them. Say, I just saw this, great job. And then always add a little comment. I'd like to meet you pretty soon. Please expect my call. And then the second one can be something. I love the idea of send out cards. You know that Lisa has always been big in the send out cards. And so utilizing that, you can send them a card that means something to them. But if you'll do three little touches that are positive in nature that connect with them, when you finally get to the point where you're asking for that appointment, I call it a visit instead of an appointment, but when you're asking for that first visit, they've already got kind of a positive feeling about you, and it makes that fusion point happen. It makes them more comfortable taking that next step and giving you the appointment. And not everybody will say yes. But your percentage of people who will say yes to that are higher than the others by a good deal. So
nice. Well, and I love the combination of the fusion points and the objection proof, right? But it was so obvious when in the story, you know, we mentioned this idea of overcoming objections, and you're like, nobody wants to be overcome. Let's try overcoming your wife when she doesn't agree with you. See how well that goes.
Mine would overcome right back.
And I'll be sleeping on the couch. So when we start to think about it in a relational way, it changes the conversation, and it changes how we want to approach, because most of the time people's objections, first of all, they're typically not true. Right. Second of all, they're reactions to what we perceive in that sales conversation, right? And the typical order, right, is how much sacrifice or money am I going to have to, both time and money, right? So there's a time element, there's a money element, and then there's a fear element.
Right.
And a good sales professional has prepared themselves to have a conversation to objection proof those right. fears, right?
Right, right. And you know, in the way we teach it in the book, it's not like we're saying say these exact words, because that's not all that helpful to you. What we're doing is we're teaching something I refer to as structured improvisation. We're going to teach you, you learn a framework that you can then adapt to your industry, and you can adapt it to even the call that you're doing. But you're exactly right. The idea of overcoming an objection, if you look up the root words to all that, it has to do with the word conquer. And who wants to be conquered? No one. And oftentimes, too, just like you said a second ago, the prospect may tell you one thing, but they're not even really sure why they're not ready to move forward. It's kind of like that old spidey sense, as the Spider-Man movies talk about. They're not sure why they're not comfortable moving forward. They're just not. And they may say anything, oh, your price is too high, or I don't need it, whatever, but it's something else. But if you handle it in the right way, and you show empathy, and you ask questions to help understand it from your end, they often will give you permission to basically reframe the whole issue with them. And when you can reframe that, not only are you helping them solve an issue, but you're doing it in such a way that they feel like you're on their side rather than their opponent. And it works really well.
Well, I think our survival instinct is no. Like we've been pre-programmed. This is a sales conversation. My job is to say no.
Right, exactly.
And so if we know that that's the starting point for the majority of people, we have to help them reframe that this conversation is really about how can I help you and how can I serve you. Now, absolutely. The challenge, I think, is the industry has been marred by people who have used this influence in a negative way and have tried to, you know, have sold people stuff they didn't need, have sold people stuff that didn't work. And so let's talk about the ethics of sales as our kind of last closing up piece. Okay.
Well, you know, when sales is done properly, when it's a professional who really is doing it and it's at its core, at its very best, it's really focusing on the other person, finding out what they need, they want, or they desire, and then helping them get that. And it's not about our product or our service. I get tickled when people, I'll hear people mention value propositions, and companies will spend a lot of money communicating what they feel like their value proposition is. And it's well-intended, and I don't mean to downplay that, but they tend to be talking about, okay, this is what we do. This is our value proposition. We do this for you, and that's the transaction, but we also do this and this and this and this, and it's really good stuff, but it really misses the point on a value proposition, because our value proposition has nothing to do with us. A prospect doesn't care how good our company is. It doesn't care how good our product or service is. That person doesn't even care how great we are as salespeople. And I know all your followers are great salespeople. What they care about is what's going to change in their world if they do something with you. You know, if you sell blue widgets, but it makes someone 3 inches taller and they wanted to be taller, well, then it's not about your widget. It's about the fact they can be 3 inches taller. It's all about them. And so when you get down to it, if you're focused on the other person in your process, truly caring and being focused on them, and how their life, how they will personally benefit either professionally or personally when they have a relationship with you. You focus there and it becomes really about their benefit. And so I say a value proposition has nothing to do with us. It's all about them. So it's really their value from our proposition. And when you're understanding that and you're really heart focused on, okay, I want to help somebody do this, we salespeople get the best job in the world, because what really happens, we have a person with a need, something they want to see changed in their life. We have a company that's got something that'll do exactly that. We put the two entities together and then we get paid for being in the middle and making that connection. I tell people we're almost like professional matchmakers, because right. It's really what it comes down to. And so if you're focused in the right direction, it's a very, very fulfilling career.
All right, Jeff, what's the best way for someone to get this book?
The easiest way, I'm going to encourage you to go to streetwise2saleswise.com. You'll see the book information there. You'll see some of the reviews. You'll also be able to download the first two chapters if you'd like first, to make sure it's something you'd like to get. And then if you're going to purchase, I would go through those links to purchase. And the reason I say that's one thing, the Audible book is available on Audible. Of course, it sits on Amazon as well. There's a paperback version that sits on Amazon. The Kindle version sits there. On the hardbacks, though, that we found a much faster delivery source. And so if you want the hardbound book, click the link there on streetwise2saleswise.com. It'll take you to Ingram Spark. You'll get the book faster. It's amazing. They're great. And then, of course, if someone wants me to work with them as a team, they can go to jeffcwest.com or just go to fusionpoints.com. And that kind of goes over some things that I'll do to help companies.
Jeff, sure appreciate you taking the time today. We end every episode with our guests sharing their words of wisdom to those folks listening. So what would your words of wisdom be today?
My words of wisdom has nothing to do with business. Although I guess it really does when you think about it. Earlier, I mentioned Jack Amberson, my first sales manager. Robert, I learned a lesson that changed my world and it changed my family's world from that man. I grew up in a very, it was a good upbringing, but it wasn't, I didn't grow up with parents that really emotionally or verbally expressed their love for their children. Well, I'm at Jack's house that week during spring break, and every morning his children would come in, and his son, Ted, I think at the time was first grade, and Becky was younger than him. We'd be around the table drinking coffee, or we'd be around the coffee drinking tables. I'm not sure how that works.
There we go. Okay. Go for it.
I'm a writer. I can make this stuff up. but we would sit there and the kids would run in there. They'd jump up in his lap. And he said two things to him, Robert, that I had never seen a man do before. And he said, "I love you so much. I am so proud that God picked me to be your daddy." And it blew me away. And it's not that my parents didn't love me. They absolutely did. But it wasn't, they didn't verbally show it like that. And so later in life, when I had my daughters, that's how I raised them. And as I've watched them now that I'm a grandparent, both my kids have children of their own, and I'll see them doing the same thing with their kids. And it just warms my heart, because it changed that cycle, and it changed it. Not just for me. I got an email from a girl in Australia not too long ago about this. And she had started telling her parents how glad she was they were her parents. And she said, "It's just amazing what it does to the relationship." And so I sent Jack a text message that day. I said, "See, they're here, buddy." I said, "I worked with you, what, 2-3 years? And you didn't just change my world. You're changing people's world in Australia now." So.
I love the power of impact. And obviously love is the most powerful thing in the world. So yeah. Wield it well. And all of us want more love in our lives. So. Thanks, absolutely. Jeff, so much for joining me today. This has been a fantastic conversation. Encourage people, go to streetwise2saleswise.com and order your book.
It's been an honor, Robert. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you for tuning into this episode, brought to you by the power of intentional decisions that lead to massive action. These aren't just buzzwords. They're qualities that can help you take control of your life and build a successful 6- or 7-figure business. To support you on this journey, we're offering one of our most popular books, Fish Out, Leads In, 52 Fresh Ideas for Lead Generation. You can download it free at enjoybizlife.com. And if you enjoyed this episode, please show us some love by liking, subscribing, and leaving a review. But most importantly, share it with someone who needs to hear it. In our next episode, Robert and Dr. Julie Ducharme have a wonderful conversation about empowering women to take control of their lives through their business. She's created multiple companies and organized She Talks, a platform for women to share their stories and encourage each other. Julie is a force, and you don't want to miss this encouraging conversation.